Hey, what's up? It's your boy Lil Jon. You're checking out my combo on the Dana Cortez Show. Yeah!
The Dana Cortez Show podcast begins now.
Welcome, Lil Jon, to the Dana Cortez Show. Man, how are you?
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm great, man. I'm blessed. I'm blessed to be here.
I've been trying to look up just the discography, look everything up. It's too much. So I just want to talk about just listening to your music throughout the years. And some of the surprises, right? The production that you look back at, Too Short, you produced for him, E-40, you produced for him. Yep. One of my favorite songs ever, classic, Baby Bash and T-Pain, Cyclone.
Yeah.
Which recently just went viral at Coachella, their whole performance. How have you been able to have a massive amount of hits, forever songs, when some people just wish for one? What is that?
I think it's because I'm a DJ. My background as a DJ make me, like, when I create, I'm creating music that can play in the club and the DJs are going to want to play it, and they, right, that can rock a party. And I think that's why the songs are timeless, because most of my hits, my biggest records, are all club songs.
True.
When so, I said Cyclone, I thought about that. You could drop that at the club right now and everybody gets up to go dance.
When we were looking at the discography, I didn't realize you were involved with My Boo. Ghost Town.
Yeah. I kind of co-produced it, but at the time I didn't know that I could be a producer on the song, because that was the first project I did on So So Def, and I put the producer with the writer, and I was involved in every aspect of that song, from even down to the mixing, everything. And it was the first project I executive produced for So So Def, so I didn't know that I could be a producer too.
At that time, right?
I was in my 20s. Yeah, I was in my 20s. So, I didn't know that I could be listed as a producer, but I did producer stuff. So, yeah, I was in. That was my record.
That was like pretty much your first hit then, right?
That was probably that and this song, Capleton Tour.
Oh, that was you?
Yeah, Capleton Tour with the Children's Story beat. That was me and my partner, Paul Lewis. So those were around the same time, I think.
The new one again?
When I think about, I just talked about Forever Songs, Ghost Town DJs, you know, just had a moment on TikTok and Instagram where it went viral. When you see that, do you look back at where you were and think, oh my God, I can't believe all these years, I'm still just working at what you love?
Well, what's crazy is when you have like Saweetie come and use my song, one of my beats, and it becomes a hit again. And it's like, wow, I'm old enough now and I've been in the game so long now that my stuff is getting sampled. Like we were sampling, you know, James Brown and everybody else and Isaac Hayes and all of this music. Like I've been around long enough where I'm getting sampled.
That's got to be
good. So that is what makes you feel like, wow, you know, so.
Checks.
Yeah,
the checks are great.
And
thank you, sweetie. Thank you, girl.
And alive to enjoy the money.
Yeah.
The
best thing. Alive and healthy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You changed your life recently. I've noticed that you got the chakra stuff going. You got no more real like diamonds and gold. It's more.
I mean, I have it. I might, if I feel like wearing, you know what I mean? But it's about protection and upliftment and, you know, grounding. Like I got my copper for the grounding, and this is my daughter's birthstones. And then this is for wealth. Pyrite. You know, so I'm getting older and wiser, and my daughter is 18 months. I got to be here for her, you know, first day of kindergarten and high school graduations and college graduations. So I got to, health is very important, you know, to be here that long.
How did you start getting into that though? Because I'm Mexican.
I know, because you grew up on meditation and all that stuff.
I grew up on, like, seriously, how did you get into it?
Crystals, one of the bottle service young ladies at the club one day gave me some crystals. And I was like, wow, this is a cool gift. Like, I think it was for my birthday or something. She gave me some crystals. And then I started getting crystals from that. And then, you know, also being on the road, I got into health. Like, somebody turned me on to juicing and ginger shots and, you know, like, just started to
get healthy on the road.
Yeah. So different people turning me on to different things. And then when I turned 50, that was when life, like, really changed for me. Like, I started going, I was like, I'm ready to get out of this marriage I was in and divorce, and I didn't like the way my mindset was. And that's how I started to get into meditation, and we recorded the meditation albums, and then I just started to just really shift my mindset and just become a new human being. I stopped drinking around that time too, so a lot of big life changes happened for me at 50.
Do you miss drinking? Is that something that you missed when you started right away?
When I stopped, I missed it. But then as I, you know, as months passed and you come out of the fog and you just realize you don't have to drink to have a good time.
I don't
knock people for drinking and partying because, like, hey, do you?
I don't drink as much.
It's just like marriage. You got to be ready to be married. Yeah, you got to be ready to stop drinking and do other things. So I think it was just time for me. Like, I finally, like, I say to people all the time, like, eventually you're going to grow. You got to grow up.
Yeah.
Like, for me, so it was like, because I've literally been drinking since 15. So it was 30 years of drinking.
You said at 50.
Yeah, it's basically a new life has started for me. So
I wasn't aware that you have a year and a half year old daughter. That's,
yeah.
How's that going?
Man, it's beautiful. It's just like when I had my son, I was still trying to make it, you know, 1998. I hadn't even had a big, like, you know, I hadn't had any of the success yet. And so it was a grind, and I'm more present for my daughter now. And then also I realized when I lost my son that I think God was giving me her. He was slowing me down to get ready for my daughter, but he was also giving me my daughter to get ready for the loss of my son, because she's been able to be there for me and give me that innocence and that love, that extra love that I needed to give me and reason to live.
Yeah.
You know what,
yes,
I mean?
When you,
and be happy.
When you talked about having your son and being young, I was 15 when I had my first daughter. Mm. I could relate to that so much.
Yeah.
It's not that you were a bad father. You just weren't the best father you could be.
Right.
When you get older,
you're still figuring it out.
You're still figuring it out on your own. How are you?
I'm
after,
good.
The loss of your son.
I mean, it's tough. You know, you lose someone, it's going to hurt. It's going to hurt. Yeah, it's going to hurt. And it's like you literally just take it day by day. But, you know, through like the fans, so many people like reached out, showed me love. And it's just, you know, family's been right there with me, and friends have, everybody's been supportive. And it's, you know, it's just, you got to just take your time and get through it. And you let the grief hit you, and you deal with it.
That's what I was going to say, because I've lost people that I love dearly. A child that was almost unimaginable. Is travel, is being on the road, is it cathartic? Is it helpful to you in a way, the fans' energy?
Well, it was really hard because we were like 3 or 4 months out from the tour when I lost him. And so it was critical stages of me having to finalize the music, get visuals, and all of this stuff. And I had to be creative as I'm going through this.
Right.
And it was really, I say it on stage, like, it was really tough to get to where I am right now. But it is therapy to, like, get in front of people and show them that I'm okay, and them give me all this good energy back, and to just be in front of, you know, be out here with Pitt, who I've known for 25 years, and, you know, and it's just, it's definitely helpful to be out of here among other people and feel good energy, you know.
We talked about music. I have to ask. You look at the charts now. All the OGs are running the top 10, top 5. What's going on with hip hop? Is it a slump? Like, every music has a genre. Is it the internet? Is it a curse and a blessing? Like, what is happening?
I think it's a lot of everything you're saying. Is the internet is, you know, like, they, some people say, people don't listen to radio anymore. They still do listen to radio. It's just they just have more options now because of, you know, Spotify's and Apple Music, where they can, you know, go do other things. Right. So, and it's just easy to make music. It's easy to put it out, and it's easy for stuff to go viral, but it's also hard for it to go viral. But yeah, I think with us, like the TIs and myself and Pitts, I think we have a different way of making music. We put more quality into our music, and that's why it lasts.
Doesn't sound microwave.
Yeah, it's not. You know, a lot of the younger rappers, they'll go and do something quick and they're done with it, while we kind of take our time to craft that product and make it special, and then, you know, get it out there. So yeah, that's, I mean, we're me and Pitt right now with Damn I Love Miami. It's such a blessing for this song because it's like 5 years old and the fans made this song a hit. Like, it's like an old fashioned record that someone found on the album cut, a deep cut, and kept and had a DJ play it. And the DJ said, I'm gonna break this song. And it went viral in the line dancing community. And then once it hit TikTok, they started to gravitate to the two brunettes and a blonde one line. And then now it's the white girls is going crazy and they got the song hot. So, I mean, thank everybody for making that song hot. And it's crazy because when we booked the tour, this song wasn't hot yet. And now we're on the road and the song is on fire.
It's crazy. Yeah.
And now we just dropped a new song, Satalana. So I think it's another one for people to party to.
I need that one.
Yeah.
When you are up on stage, as long as you've been doing this, right before you get on, do you have any nerves at all still? Or are you just ready to go?
No, I've been on I've done a Super Bowl. So it's like, you can't get bigger than that. Like, and I wasn't nervous at Super Bowl.
What was that like? That moment?
Do you feel like that's the highlight of Little Johnson?
I think that's the highlight of anybody. Yeah, like, you got, 300 million people watching you?
Worldwide, right?
Yeah.
One of the biggest,
That is definitely the highlight of my career, the biggest stage I've ever been on. And doing it was crazy because I didn't just perform. I was musical director, too. So I put the show together, the music together, too. So I was a part of the team putting the music together. It was just an amazing opportunity, amazing experience. And it's crazy because when I remember standing on the sideline right before it's my time to go out, and I just kind of look around like, wow, I'm actually here. Like, you know, and then I go out and I do my thing and I don't realize I have these in-ears in, so I can't hit a crowd.
Yeah.
And I didn't really see the reaction for real. And then it's dark and it's like the lights, I couldn't really see the crowd.
Stadium, yeah.
Yeah, as an artist, you feed off the crowd, like what you see and all of that. I couldn't feed off of them because I couldn't really see them. But when I saw it on the internet, I was like, wow, like this is crazy. Yeah, that I did that. We did that. That was amazing. So, yeah, it was awesome.
What do you think of Jay-Z's choices the past few years for Super Bowl, from, Kendrick to Bad Bunny, which was quite the controversial choice, which kind of I didn't understand, but What do you think?
I think he's making great choices. It's about bringing good culture. You know, it's not for a long time it was certain artists, only a certain type of artist doing it. Now he's bringing some diversity in and then bringing artists that are the pulse of the culture, what is running the culture. So I think he's doing a great job.
You worked with Pitbull for 25 years. Would you do, or you've known him that long, you guys have hit after hit for a long time, would you do something with Bad Bunny?
Oh, of course, yeah. Bad Bunny is dope, yeah.
Okay, I just asked him.
Benito, give us a call, bro.
Put that into the universe, manifest it.
Holla!
So, we were talking about your music earlier. What was the one beat that you thought, like, this one might not go, but then...
Blow the Whistle.
Blow the Whistle, oh,
really?
Wow.
Because you have to think, Blow the Whistle and Tell Me When to Go was done at the same time, the same week.
Oh yeah.
So we finished Blow the Whistle later.
Did you do them in the Bay?
We did both of those records in Atlanta. Okay. At Outkast Studio. I did the beats at Outkast Studio and we recorded short at his house. But so Tell Me When to Go was going crazy and everybody's ghost riding the whip.
Yeah,
and that's even getting out of the Bay, you got people in Iowa ghost riding the whip.
Yeah.
So you got to think that was what was going on. And then we have Blow the Whistle. It's not the same type of energy that Tell Me When to Go has. So I thought, oh, that's cool. It ain't Tell Me When to Go. And then Blow the Whistle actually outlasted Tell Me When to Go. So that's one.
I mean, they're two forever records, though.
Yeah, but Blow the Whistle, I think, is bigger.
You can still play it, yeah.
It's the biggest one.
Anywhere, but yeah, that one still goes, even with Grandma.
I mean, Jay-Z.
Jay-Z
rapped over Blow the Whistle.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah, so.
When you first started this, did your parents support you? Were they cool with you doing this? Because they're... They're pretty educated people, right? I know you are as well. Your son, I'm sure your daughter will be as well.
Yeah.
Were they supportive?
I was a DJ when I started, and they didn't get it at first.
Yeah.
But they were kind of like, okay, my dad would take me to the record store if I need to go to the record store sometimes. But then I got in this one big club in Atlanta, and my mom used to come. So she saw that. So she was supportive. No, she used to come on her own. Oh. She used to be like, I'm going to come check you out. I don't even know why she started coming, but she would come sometimes and have a great time.
You were doing okay.
Nah, she just wanted to party. She wanted to party.
Same thing happened. My mom came one night with her and her friends. And after that, she was like, I get it now.
Yeah. Yeah, they like, okay, you weren't just banging around making noise in the basement.
That makes, like, to that part of her, how did you come up with the Krunk sound? Like, what, like, production tools, all that stuff where you, like, came across where you're like, this is going to be my sound?
It just kind of happened. Like, every album I produced, like, as an album, I would go to the music store and buy new, like, pieces of equipment. And so, like, the sound from Yeah and Damn, that was just a piece of equipment I bought. And I was just... It's called the Novation. It's a Novation. I don't remember which module it was, but it was a Novation. And I think I used that sound first on the Youngblood song, Damn.
Yeah.
And then I used it on Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, sometimes you just kind of stumble on, you just go through sounds. Like, you're trying to find something new. You don't like want to necessarily use the same sound over and over again unless it becomes signature, like that sound.
That's your signature sound.
Yeah, that was my signature sound for a while. So I had to use that. But I would always buy new equipment when I'm working on new projects, and it just sometimes it just happens.
That's kind of full circle to what we were just talking about, artists. You were trying to make something different. It seems like people are always, they kind of want to sound like everybody else. Well, that's it.
Yeah.
Try to sound like that.
Yeah.
Who right now, besides your own music, are you listening to? Like, who's somebody you're like?
Oh, Olivia Dean.
Ooh.
Olivia Dean is cold.
Is she?
It's something about her. Her energy, her spirit is so happy.
Can't you feel it?
Like, yeah.
Listen to her music?
I saw her the first time. I never heard her music. Me and my wifey was at the Clive Davis Grammy party.
Okay.
She, like, a bunch of people performed. She got up there and performed, and I swear she woke the room up. Her aura just resonated through the room, her performance, her energy, and it woke the room up. And it was just something about her. Was just, she exudes happiness.
Right?
It's something.
She feels good.
Yes. We don't have that anymore.
Her music is lovely.
Yeah. So I really, really like her a lot.
She's got that old new sound.
Yeah.
Like,
it's just.
I describe it as pretty.
It just makes me feel good.
Yeah.
Like, we need more artists that make you feel good. Some people's music make you feel icky. She just makes you feel happy.
I don't know how you'd work with her. We got to figure that out.
I can do all types of music.
Yeah.
It's too.
Yeah.
Anybody else you're listening to right now that you're like, this is good?
I think just Olivia Dean is just, she's the top right now for me, because she just, it's her inner, her spirit. Because, you know, that's what it is in your music. Like, you hear Aretha Franklin sing, her spirit is captured on the vinyl or whatever it is,
you
on the tape.
You hear it, you feel it.
You feel it. So Olivia is her spirit. She just has a happy, positive energy. And I that's what I need right now. All of us need that.
That's true. You've done some reality TV. I didn't know you were on The Apprentice.
Twice.
Lord have mercy. HGTV.
Yeah.
What was that? Tell me about reality TV, working that route. How did you start that?
I think, I never wanted to do it, reality TV, but The Apprentice was like, at the time, it was a show that was different. Like, and you get to kind of showcase your intelligence and your talent. So I did it, and it was honestly one of the hardest things I ever done, because as the show progresses, there's less people to help out.
Oh, wow.
And also, it's like every 2 days, somebody's going to get fired. So every 2 days, somebody's going to get fired. And every 2-3 days, somebody's got to step up and be the project manager. So it's like, and like I said, as the show progresses, it's less to delegate. It's more on you the more it goes.
More help,
and then you get fired. If you go in the boardroom and you don't fight, you get fired. Or if you're the reason that the project you lost, you get fired. So it's it's just a really tough show, but it just showed me I could do anything.
How was it working with Trump was on that show, right?
It was cool. He was cool. He was cool on the show. Yeah.
That's what I've heard. I've heard that too. I just wish he was still cool like that. But anyway, I'm gonna keep moving. You obviously still have a lot more to do. Where do you see yourself in 10 years?
Well, I got a memoir coming out this year, October. So that's coming, and more music with me and Pitbull. We just dropped a song, Satalana.
Right.
And more music from us together and more artists. I'm still producing, you know. I got a song with Snoop getting ready to come out probably next month.
Okay.
And just more music and the book and more meditation albums. We're talking about doing kids meditation because I think kids need to learn to meditate. I think people need to start learning to meditate from a young age so it can help them deal with problems and stress.
I agree.
So
that's a brilliant idea.
Yeah, so.
We've learned more. Keep kids away from the screen. Do more meditation.
Yeah.
Reading, things like that is better.
Amen.
John, thank you for taking the time.
Thank you.
Appreciate you. God bless and keep killing it.
Yeah, thank you. The Dana Cortez Show Podcast.